Of Radio Free Thinker. This week we dedicate the show to reporting on Gaza that is oddly yet not surprisingly absent from mainstream media. Let's begin episode 259.
It's time for Radio Free Thinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. Place where reason and reality cross sword, politics, religion, economics, and of course, science. Now let's get ready to be skeptical.
The cosmos is also within us. We need a start spot. We need our way. The cosmos can do itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are others. We've traveled this way before. And there is much to be learned.
Hello and welcome. Tis I, Don, your skeptical philosopher and political scientist. Let me start by apologizing to my loyal listeners. I promised a science-themed show last week, but it seems that world events have surpassed my intentions. I promise next week's show will feature weird scientists hate us for getting wrong, cognitive bias, you'd be amazed at how many ways we get things wrong, facts we think are true but turn out to be myths, and much, much more. But that's next week. Let's start with this week's whine about Gaza, again. The Gaza Strip is yet again ablaze as Israel responds to rocket launches by, well, I'm not so sure as to what to call them. Obviously, the Israel-US Harper cabal labels them interchangeably as Hamas and terrorists. Other groups, less biased, tend to use terms like militants, irregulars, defenders even, maybe. This was all started, as everyone supposedly knows, by Hamas. So do we blame it as a thing, or should we name someone in Hamas? We're never really told, it's just Hamas. Anyway, apparently Hamas ordered the kidnapping of three Israeli teens in the West Bank. Then after a week or two, killed them. Their kidnapping sparked a massive manhunt by the IDF, that's Israeli Defense Force, in an attempt to rescue the teens. This led to a revenge killing by some Israeli vigilantes, which in turn led to the rocket launches from Gaza, which are raining terror on Israelis, including the cities as far away as Tel Aviv. In response to the rocket fire, Israel has conducted surgical strikes, quote-unquote, against Hamas leadership and the rocket platforms, or so the narrative has mostly played out on the mainstream media. Although I have heard some pushback on the CBC, there hasn't been really that much. First, let's address the timeline. In late May, two Palestinian teens were shot by the IDF, ostensibly because they were a violent threat to the soldiers. They later emerged from a security cam that showed the teens in question were nowhere near the soldiers. They were posing no risk of any kind, and in fact, one was shot in the back. It is believed that this incident was the catalyst for the first revenge killing, where the three Israeli teens were killed. Note, I did not say kidnapped and killed. It has come to light, and keep in mind, solid evidence is hard to find in this area. Anyway, it has come to light that the Israelis placed a gag order on the fact that the teens were actually known to be dead, and perhaps even were found quickly after they had gone missing, but that their, quote, kidnapping would provide the IDF an opportunity to conduct raids on Hamas and round up what the Israelis would probably call Palestinian troublemakers. You see, it seems a 911-type call from one of the captured teens at the time of their abduction, well, 10 shots can be heard. This led the FBI to conclude the teens were killed at the time of their abduction and were never really kidnapped. Note, the FBI were involved because one of the teens happened to be a U.S. citizen. Eventually, the information was released, and the missing Israelis were dead, and the IDF incarcerated a couple of Palestinians for the dead teenagers. As part of Israelis' collective punishment rules, be they formal or not, the homes of the families of the accused, well, they were demolished. This act, it seemed, sparked the aggressive rocket launches on Israel from Gaza, which in turn triggered Israeli naval and aerial bombardment. It seems that Hezbollah in Lebanon has joined in solidarity with Gaza and launched its own rockets. Now, it should be noted that prior to the rocket launches, about 200 Palestinians were rounded up and placed in detention. This includes a third of the Hamas representation in the Palestinian parliament. From the start, Israel claimed, but has yet to provide any evidence, that Hamas was behind the kidnappings of the Israelis. Some people have said that this is much like saying that an individual who once worked with, oh, I don't know, let's say Radio Shack, that any actions that they take was commanded by the CEO of the Shack. In fact, it's important to point out that Hamas is a very complex entity. It has a military wing, it has a political wing, as well as a social wing. When land has been bombarded into the Stone Age, there's often not a lot of choice as to who can or could provide social needs. Many analysts compare Hamas, like the reformed PLO before it, akin to the IRA, which started as a liberation/terrorist group, but eventually something like Sinn Féin, the political and nonviolent arm of the IRA, emerged as the need for violence diminished in the struggle for Irish self-rule in Northern Ireland. Hamas is evolving, and in a land that has no functional government, Hamas is the only police or self-defense force the people of Gaza have, as problematic as that may be. What has been pointed out, and the likely reason that the gag order I mentioned earlier was implemented, there was recently a reconciliation between the Hamas government in Gaza and the Fatah government in the West Bank. For the first time in almost a decade, the Israelis faced a united Palestinian nation, a precondition Israel placed on any permanent peace deal. I should also point out that one complaint about Hamas, again, part of the precondition of peace, is the need for the Palestinians to abandon violence, to acknowledge Israel as a Jewish state and relinquish the right to return. This current event could be seen as provocation to break down the reconciliation of the Palestinians as well as provide a punctuation point for Israelis' claim of Palestinian, or at least Hamas, violence/terrorism. Now, to be fair, Hamas is not without some guilt here. Hamas has, and is often quoted by Zionists and Israeli apologists alike, well, they have this thing called the Hamas Charter, which, well, it calls for the liberation of all Palestine, which implicitly means the end of Israel, or, if I may put it in a more positive, if not more plausible spin about it, a one-state solution. There's also a lot of anti-Semitic rhetoric about Jews planning to control the world, with sad references to the protocols of the Elder of Zion, a czarist forgery used to justify the persecution of Jews in Russia a century ago. So part of what I'm wanting to do here isn't to say that Hamas or the Palestinians are blameless. They are not. I hate to defend the Hamas unequivocally because they have done many things wrong, but it's part of a larger context. For example, Hamas, the political wing, states that it no longer supports the charter, but that it's sort of a piece of history and no longer relevant, but they can't change it for internal reasons. Further, that the world should use their election manifesto to put forward what their real agenda is. The leadership has stated many times since 2008 and explicitly in 2011 that, quote, we, Hamas, accept a Palestinian state on the borders of 1967. Now, of course, this could all be political rhetoric, but it does weave a more complex tapestry than one gets from the mainstream media. So this is one aspect, but one cannot deny that rockets are now, irrespective of justification, targeting Israeli citizens. First, it should be noted, but not seen as an excuse, the rockets used by the Palestinians are very crude, relatively. They know about how far they can go, they point them more or less in the right direction, and let them go. There's no real guidance on them. So when they say civilians are targeted, it's more by happenstance than deliberate intentions. To be fair, not a salient point for those Israelis who live with air raid sirens and rush to bomb shelters. I mention it not to excuse one side, but to provide a bigger context. And in this affront, context is everything. Note I said air raid sirens and bomb shelters. These are things that are not available to Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip. And then there's this Iron Dome. Iron Dome, a much sought-after Israeli military commodity, is an anti-missile system. You may have heard that Gaza has fired about 1,200 rockets into Israel so far, and yet you hear of only one very occasional injury. This is because Iron Dome intercepts about 30% of the total rockets, or 90% of all the rockets that are actually of risk. It should be noted, remember these badly accurate rockets, about 60% of them or more actually land in empty fields or the like and pose very little risk to anybody. In fact, as it turns out, only one person has been seriously injured, about 20 slightly injured, and a small amount of property damage on the Israeli side. I should point out that even though I am expressing the, quote, lightness of the impact of the rocket attacks, I do not in any way mean to imply that these attacks are okay. I cannot imagine what it's like to live under such conditions. So why do I bring it up? Again, context. I mentioned previously the Israelis have Iron Dome, advanced warning systems, bomb shelters, and an army, while the Palestinians only have a militia loosely organized by the military arm of Hamas. The only real weapons they have, well, they don't have tanks, no planes, no gunboats, but they do have rockets, and that's what they're using. It has been pointed out, and I think justly and if slightly unfair, that these rockets are launched from civilian areas. True, but in the small chunk of land that is Gaza, there's no real armed forces. One must ask, where else would they fire them from? This leads to the claim, again, not unfairly, that Hamas is using civilian populations as a human shield. And that is unethical and a war crime. But I have to ask the next question. Do two wrongs make a right? I mean, granted, using civilians as a shield is wrong. But is firing on those civilians any less unethical? Any less a crime? One might argue that if the rockets were killing lots of Israelis, as unethical as it may be, pragmatism wins out and you fire on the rockets, civilians be damned. I would at this point like to remind people that we talked about earlier. As of yet, there's been no Israeli casualties. What about on the Palestinian side? To date, there's been around 200 people dead, over 1,000 wounded. Then there are almost 2,000 housing units that have been destroyed or severely damaged. 3,000 more homes damaged to the point that it has left thousands of people homeless. And here we come to the crux of the problem, and something that is heard ad nauseum on one side, disproportionality. So returning to that dilemma, Hamas is wrong for using civilians as shield. But Israel doesn't need to respond with the degree of force it has. It does not need to meet war crime with war crime. Thanks to its protective precautions, it can let Gaza fire all the rockets it has until they run out, with there being no real cost to Israel. Part of the reason Israel bombs Gaza is not to protect Israel, but to punish the Palestinians. It's part of the long-standing policy of Israel to extract collective punishment for any transgression against Israel, Israel or its illegal settlements in the West Bank. Which brings us full circle. No one has asked why there were a bunch of teams hitchhiking in the West Bank in the first place. Likely they were going from one settlement to another or Israeli proper to one of the settlements. I should point out, according to international law, it's illegal, a war crime I think, for an occupying power to displace the indigenous population and establish colonial settlements in captured lands. I listened to an Israeli woman who was interviewed about the recent trouble. The interviewer asked her, "You know that bombing Gaza is only going to make things worse. Then why do you do it?" And he asked this to her 3 or 4 times. And she replied, "They're bombing us. What else could we do?" I wish I had the opportunity to respond to her and ask, how is it any different than what the Palestinians are doing? You bomb them. They bomb you. You bomb them back. Except you're better at it and you actually kill people. What have you got to lose? The moral high ground and peace. What have they got to lose? Their lives and their freedom. On that note, let's pause for a break. When we come back, I'm going to present a series of news reports from the alternative press. These are going to be fairly critical of Israel, and I don't mean for them to be taken as gospel truth. I'm only presenting them to you, my loyal listeners, to help provide a bit of pushback, a bit of counterbalance for the extremely biased pro-Israeli media reports that we get. I can't tell you the number of times that I have heard on any of the major networks where they sit there and say, the Israeli Defense Department says this, the Israeli Defense Department reports this, and that's the end of the story. You never hear the other side. So today's show is going to present the other side. Take it with a grain of salt. As I have said on many occasions, I am not a fan or a supporter of Hamas. They are a highly religious organization, and I feel very uncomfortable. In fact, I distaste what they do. I do not like lots of what they do, but I understand to a degree why it is happening, why the people of Gaza feel so desperate that they will grab onto any branch that comes by, even if it is something like Hamas. What's really needed is for the West to put pressure to force Israel to deal with all the Palestinians in an honest way, to provide an alternative path than that which has been provided by, if nothing else, the military part of Hamas. So again, take this with a grain of salt, but be aware, there's always more than one side, and we don't always know the other side. We don't always hear the other side. This is your chance to hear the other side. We'll be right back after this break.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
And we're back. So first we're going to play a clip from the Real News Network. Quote, Israeli propaganda and the politics of revenge against Gaza. It's an interview with Ali Adama and Max Blumenthal, and they discuss how the Israeli government manipulates the public into accepting an escalated military operation against Gaza after the murders of the three teenagers. This was originally aired on July 11th.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Anton Warnchuk in Baltimore. Over 100,000 Gazans who live near the border with Israel were warned to leave their homes as Israeli officials continue to hint towards a ground invasion of the Gaza Strip. The news comes as at least 77 Palestinians have been killed since Tuesday, most of them civilians. Joining us now to give their analysis on the situation is Ali Abunima and Max Blumenthal. Ali Abunima is the co-founder and executive director of the Electronic Intifada and the author of the new book, The Battle for Justice in Palestine. Max Blumenthal, who's also joining us, is an award-winning journalist and best-selling author. His latest book is Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Good to be with you.
So Max, let's start with you. Let's get your response to recent news that 100,000 Gazans have been warned to leave their homes. Do you think that a ground invasion is imminent?
Well, the Palestinians who live in the Gaza Strip are 80% refugees. 80% of them are descended directly from those who were forced off their land in what is now Israel in 1947 and 1948. And now they're being told to leave again, and they have nowhere to go. There are no bomb shelters in the Gaza Strip. There is nowhere for these refugees to flee. And the brutal military dictatorship of Egypt, which has risen to power through a coup, will refuse to let them out through the other side, through the Rafah crossing. So this is another humanitarian catastrophe, which Israel seems to cause every 2 years or so within the Gaza Strip. I've heard a lot of rumblings about a military invasion, that it would be a limited incursion of 10,000 ground troops or so. The right-wingers in Israel's governing coalition are pushing Netanyahu for this invasion for the pure purposes of revenge and to satiate the braying masses who represent their constituents, who are taking to Facebook to post calls for the death of Arabs, and taking to Twitter to do the same. The military intelligence apparatus is pushing for such an invasion to suppress rocket fire from the Gaza Strip and to assassinate as many high-level leaders of Hamas as possible. So it seems like forces are aligned in support of an invasion, but we'll have to see how events play out in the coming day or two.
Okay, and Ali, what do you think is the Israeli strategic objective in this offensive against Gaza?
Well, I think Max is right that it's revenge, and it's largely revenge and an effort to satiate, for political reasons, the bloodlust among the Israeli public, which has reached unbelievable proportions. We see human rights organizations warning that the levels of incitement from Israeli leaders calling for violence have reached unprecedented proportions, and Israel is satisfying that bloodlust with horrifying attacks which are targeting and killing civilians. Last night, for example, Israel bombed the Funtime Beach Cafe in Gaza, where young people had gathered to watch the World Cup match, Argentina versus Netherlands, in order to escape some of the horror that was around them. And Israel bombed it, killing 9 people, and according to the AFP report, scattering body parts all over the beach. And this comes as, you know, at least now 22 children have been killed. And most of the civilian casualties, according to the UN, I quote from the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs today, the targeting and destruction of residential properties in Gaza is the main cause of civilian casualties. And that's so important because all of the Israeli propaganda, which is being parroted in the mainstream media, is that Israel does its best to avoid civilian casualties. When in fact, by yesterday, Israel had targeted over 150 private homes, and this is collective punishment. It's a war crime. They're targeting the family homes of people that Israel says may be involved in military resistance, and they're killing their families and their children in the process. It's pretty shocking that this is happening at the same time that the Israeli ambassador went before the UN Security Council today and told that body that the Palestinians celebrate death. Nobody is celebrating the deaths of all of these innocent people except for the Israeli government ministers that are ordering these crimes and the mobs in the streets of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv chanting death to the Arabs.
Okay, and Max, the pretext for this offensive, though not really much mentioned now, is the murder of the 3 Israeli teenagers and Israel's claims that Hamas was responsible. And we also know now that the gag order that was originally issued regarding the deaths of the Israeli teenagers was made when the Israeli officials were making public statements that implied that they did not know that the Israeli teenagers, in fact, were dead. So let's start from this gag order and trace how did we get to this offensive against the Gaza Strip from the gag order.
I'll try to keep it brief. It's difficult to do so, although it's easy for our mainstream media to do so. They are covering this escalation of violence as though it's happened in a vacuum, as though Hamas provoked the whole thing. Without any political context, the kidnapping of the 3 Israeli teens occurred on June 12th against the backdrop of unprecedented political pressure on Netanyahu. The Hamas-Fatah unity deal, which he sought to shatter, which the U.S. recognized was a source of deep anxiety among Netanyahu and his inner circle. There was the killings of 2 Palestinian teens in Betunia on May 15th, captured on closed circuit TV and by a CNN cameraman, which had Human Rights Watch had called a war crime. More political pressure. Netanyahu wanted to reframe the discussion, so the 3 Israeli teens were kidnapped. A recorded call indicated with gunshots heard on the recorded call to the police by the teens that they had been killed right away. The Israeli government and police knew who the 2 suspects were, 2 characters with affiliation to a rogue Hamas cell, indicating that Hamas had no knowledge of the kidnapping and that it contravened their political goals and the goals of the unity agreement. Netanyahu seized the opportunity to milk this kidnapping for all the propaganda value it was worth, lying even to the parents of the teenagers, telling them that their teens were alive and that those gunshots they heard in the phone call were blanks. The military and the Shin Bet intelligence service imposed a gag order, preventing the Israeli media from reporting on any details of the investigation into the killings, convincing the Israeli public that the teens were alive. And as Israeli troops rampaged through the West Bank, raiding over 15,000 Palestinian homes, arresting over 560 Palestinians without charges, killing six Palestinians, Israelis believed that they were on a rescue mission, while Netanyahu and his diplomatic corps deployed a propaganda campaign to bring back our boys, even while they knew that those boys were dead. They set the Israeli public up for this orgy of revenge. When the bodies were found, Jewish Israelis reacted with extreme shock. Mobs poured out into Jerusalem with young men chanting death to Arabs. A group of young men apparently met at one of these spontaneous racist rallies in Jerusalem and went out on a hunt in occupied East Jerusalem for young Palestinian boys to abduct. They found one, 17-year-old Mohammed Abu Khuder, burned him alive, forcing him to drink gasoline, dumping his body in the woods, and the situation deteriorated from there. Netanyahu had blamed all of Hamas, calling them human animals in an official statement and declaring, "Vengeance for the blood of a small child Satan has not yet created." Netanyahu inspired and incited this orgy of revenge and the official campaign of revenge, apart from the vigilante campaign, which claimed the life of Abu Khuder, is now taking place in Gaza Strip, governed by Hamas. And just another point, the three suspects in the killing of Mohammed Abu Khuder have been released. They are now under house arrest, and the Israeli police are claiming one had an alibi. Well, Palestinian suspects in crimes against Jewish Israelis never get to have an alibi. The Israeli government has reinstituted its policy of collective punishment and the destruction of the homes of accused Palestinian terror suspects. I don't think bulldozers will be showing up at the homes of these Israeli teens who responded to Netanyahu's call for revenge.
And Ali, let's get your take on how well do you think that the mainstream press, the mainstream media, has been reporting on this conflict, the offensive against Gaza in the United States?
Well, with a few exceptions, it's been absolutely disastrous. And one of the most egregious examples the other day, ABC News on its main evening news showed pictures of Palestinians, you know, picking through the rubble of their destroyed homes, but told a nationwide audience that these were Israelis. So reinforcing the false narrative that, you know, it's Palestinians who are the aggressors and Israelis who are the suffering victims. ABC News has apologized for that now, but the damage was done. I don't know if it was deliberate or not, but it certainly shows the level of ignorance among many media makers and producers in the mainstream who wouldn't have been able to tell who is who because they have so little background and so little context. Yesterday I heard a report from Daniel Esterin on NPR, and he began almost every sentence with the phrase, Israel says. It was like he was reading a government press release. You take the New York Times, where Jody Rudoran, the bureau chief, doesn't give readers anything unless she's first, quote, unquote, confirmed it with the Israeli army. And I have to say, sadly, that progressive media have not been any better. When you look across the board at progressive media, whether it's the famous shows on MSNBC or The Nation magazine and others, this issue has been really absent, or when they've invited voices in, it's often been very, very rarely Palestinians who get to speak directly about their experience. That's really a problem.
Okay, and Ali, let's also briefly talk about, you were recently filming participants at a pro-Israel rally in Los Angeles. Tell us what happened.
Well, this was on Tuesday. I was in L.A. for a couple of days, and there was a big rally. Actually, hundreds of people turned out outside the Israeli consulate in solidarity with Palestinians and to oppose the attacks. But before I went to that rally, I went to a pro-Israel rally, which was across Wilshire Boulevard. And I was openly filming and talking to people. And just as I was being told by one of the participants, I'd asked him, how could we make all this stop? He said, the answer is to eliminate Muslims. And then he began an anti-Muslim tirade. I was in a conversation with others. There were others at that pro-Israel rally who disagreed with him, and we were talking. And then out of the blue, I was simply jumped on by LAPD officers and dragged away and threatened and handcuffed. And I was effectively removed and prevented from recording and filming and reporting. I believe that what happened is that one of the organizers of that rally saw me, saw the fact that embarrassing things were being said on camera that exposed the racism at these rallies, the anti-Palestinian hatred that is endemic, and he set the police on me. I believe that is what happened, and it was caught on video that is posted at the Electronic Intifada.
Okay, and what would you say to critics that say that you put yourself in a situation where you knew that it could possibly escalate and that police did the right thing, preventing you from entering a situation in which you might have been attacked?
Well, the only escalation was by the police, because anyone who watches the video can see that even though I was being told some pretty racist things, it was a totally calm conversation. I was having a back and forth with participants at that rally. They knew I was filming them. I was doing it openly. You can see me in one of the videos that was taken by someone else. I'm holding the camera up like this. There's no mistaking what's going on. The only escalation is when the LAPD assaulted, battered, and handcuffed me.
Can I interject something? I'm fairly well known for filming at these kind of rallies of pro-Israel partisans in New York City. You can see my videos on YouTube. I go with a camera and a microphone, and I ask them what they think. And I have never had any problem with police interfering with my right to film and conduct journalism, which is exactly what Ali was doing in a very polite manner. And so, you know, to me, it indicates to me that Ali was profiled. He was profiled for having olive skin, and he was asked by the cops, are you with the Palestinians? He was then informed that he was trying to fire people up when he was doing no such thing. So it was a clear act of police overreaction by an LAPD, which has been involved ever since Bill Bratton's tenure as LAPD LAPD chief, in close coordination, training coordination with the Israeli military. And Bratton has brought that coordination back to New York City, where he has been appointed police commissioner by the supposed progressive Bill de Blasio. These relationships have had a deleterious impact on the relationship between police and communities because they're being influenced by a occupying sectarian force that views a certain civilian population as endemically violent, hostile, and dangerous.
Okay, Max Blumenthal and Ali Al-Bunima, thank you both for joining us.
We'll return with more after this break.
Science is the best tool ever devised for understanding our world.
To subscribe to the Radio Free Thinker podcast and take it on the go and download previous episodes, subscribe via iTunes or at RadioFreeThinker.com. Remember to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at CITRRFT. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts to share with us, email at info@RadioFreeThinker.com.
And we're back. Next, we're going to have an interview done on Democracy Now! Quote, Israel targets civilians. The casualties speak volumes.
We begin today's show in the Gaza Strip, where Israeli defense forces and tanks are positioned along the border in the seventh day of Israel's offensive. As of this morning, the Palestinian death toll has reached at least 172, among them 140 civilians, including 30 children. According to Gaza's health ministry, more than 1,200 people have been wounded. This weekend brought the deadliest strikes to date, including a bombing that killed 18 members of the same family. No Israelis have been killed. On Sunday, the Israeli military dropped leaflets and sent text messages to warn residents of the northern Palestinian town of Beit Lahaya to evacuate the area as a plan to intensify its large-scale bombing campaign. One displaced resident described an Israeli leaflet telling locals, quote, any moving body after noon will be struck, unquote. In addition to bombing homes, Israel's carried out a number of attacks on Gaza's civilian infrastructure. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights says the targets have included charities, parks, sports clubs, and a mosque. The United Nations Humanitarian Affairs Office estimates thousands have been displaced in Gaza. Almost 1,000 homes have been destroyed. On Saturday, Israeli shelling killed two disabled women and wounded four when a tank shell struck a rehabilitation center in Gaza City. A member of an ambulance crew spoke to the media.
These are the targets of Bibi Netanyahu. These are the remains of children. These are dolls for children. These are the targets of Bibi Netanyahu. These are the targets of the Jews. They are children in an organization for the disabled.
The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has expressed alarm at the escalation in fighting as the Security Council is demanding a ceasefire. His office released a statement that, quote, the Secretary General does not believe that what is inherently a long-standing, serious political dispute between Israelis and Palestinians can be resolved via military means by either side. He remains engaged with both sides to urge de-escalation and an end to violence. On Sunday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told the Israeli cabinet that responsibility for civilian deaths in Gaza lies with Hamas.
We don't know when this operation will be over. It may take a long time, and we need your support and your discipline. Hamas uses the residents of Gaza as a human shield and is bringing disaster on the residents of Gaza. And therefore, the responsibility for any harm done to civilians in Gaza, which we regret, the responsibility is that of Hamas and its partners and them alone.
Militants in Gaza have fired hundreds of rockets at Israel. Well, for more, we're joined from Harvard University by Diana Buttu, an attorney based in Palestine. She has served as a legal advisor to the Palestinians in negotiations with Israel. She was previously an advisor to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. We welcome you to Democracy Now! Diana Buttu, can you respond to the latest news from Gaza right now?
Yes, Amy. In addition to the killings of people, there have been more than 940 houses that have been destroyed by the Israeli army. In addition to much of the water infrastructure has also been targeted. This is a war that has been taking place against the Palestinian civilian population, deliberately designed to bring down the Palestinian civilian population. And this is why we've been calling for international intervention to hold Israel accountable and to make sure that this precisely stops.
So can you talk about how you see this ending?
The problem is, Amy, is that I don't see it ending. The real issue here is whether Israel's going to be held accountable. And so far, there hasn't been any international actors who step forward to say anything to Israel or to do anything against Israel. There haven't been sanctions lobbied against Israel. There haven't been any statements. And at the end of the day, it's going to be simply a question of whether Israel gets tired of continuing to bomb a civilian population. We've seen this in the past when it's carried out bombing campaigns against Lebanon and also the previous bombing campaigns against Gaza. They usually end when public opinion turns against Israel. And at the point in time, I just don't see that there's any action that's being taken to stop Israel from continuing to carry out these attacks.
I want to turn to comments made by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the weekend on Fox News.
You know, here's the difference between us. We're using missile defense to protect our civilians, and they're using their civilians to protect their missiles. That's basically the difference. They're embedding these rockets that they're firing wholesale into our cities, terrorist rocketing, trying to kill as many as they can. They're not succeeding because of two reasons. One is because we've developed this incredible missile defense system which I think is a historic development in the history of defensive warfare, with U.S. help. And I want to thank the American people, President Obama, the U.S. Congress for helping us fund this this amazing development. But the other reason we're succeeding, you have to understand, some of the rockets do pierce through this shield. And the reason we're succeeding is also because we're targeting the Rocketeers. The Rocketeers are firing from homes. These homes are actually command posts of the Hamas and Islamic Jihad army. So we're that's where they have their secure communications, weapon caches, rockets, hidden map rooms, and so on. These are their command posts. Obviously, we're not going to give them immunity, and so we have to attack them, and we're trying to minimize as we can civilian casualties.
That's the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Fox this week. And Diana Butu, again, he said, we're using missile defense to protect our civilians. They're using their civilians to protect their missiles. That's basically the difference, he says.
This is simply Israeli propaganda at its finest. When you look at the death toll and you see the numbers, then the numbers actually speak volumes. When you see that 80% of the people who've been killed are civilian, when you see that half of them are women and children, and when you see that who they're actually bombing is a population, 43% of whom are under the age of 14, then it's very easy to pierce through the propaganda. But more importantly, I think it's important to keep in mind that when Israel talks about who it's targeting, what it's targeting, they've never proffered any proof or any evidence for what it is that they're trying to hit. They simply make these allegations, and networks like Fox take it in and simply accept it as being fact. But the fact of the matter is that when all of this is over, Israel has never allowed independent investigators to come in and see what it is that Israel's doing. At the end of the day, as much as Israel tries to claim that they're not targeting civilians, they are, and the casualties speak volumes.
Last week, we spoke to Joshua Hantman, the senior advisor to Israel's ambassador to the United States. I asked him about the killing. At that point, it was more than 100 Palestinians had been killed by Israeli airstrikes, most of them women and children. This was his response.
For Israel, any civilian death is not only a tragedy, but it's a failure as well. And we review every single operation and every single strike to see how we can improve. We've hit over 800 targets to try and stop these rockets, to try and stop this indiscriminate missile fire against our civilians. And out of those 800 targets, I'll be honest, the precision is quite outstanding. And there is no military in the history of the world that has actually used such precision targets. I mean, think about it from military tactics point of view. We tell our enemies, we tell Hamas where we're going to hit. We tell them with text messages, with phone calls, with leaflets. We tell them in order to get civilians out of harm's way. But for them, civilian death is actually a success.
That's Joshua Hantman, the senior advisor to Israel's ambassador to the United States, again responding to my question about the number of Palestinian children and women who've been killed. He talked about precision bombing. Diana Butu, your response.
Yes, he's precise. He is precisely bombing children, and he's precisely bombing women. If their targeting is so precise, then what he's saying is actually correct, that they are actually targeting women and children and civilians. And so at the end of the day, as much as they can try to coat this as being somehow an aggression against some elements within the Gaza Strip, we know otherwise. And the death tolls in these past three aggressions against the Gaza Strip, these past three massacres, really lay out the picture that is actually happening there. Amy, it's important to keep in mind exactly what we're talking about here in the Gaza Strip. This is a place that is twice the size of D.C., Washington, D.C., and it's got 1.8 million people in it. Half of the population is under the age of 18. As I said, 43% is under the age of 14. If you were age 7 at this point in time, you've been through three bombing campaigns by the Israelis. So at the end of the day, as much as the Israelis want to claim that they're using this target precision devices, etc., the toll is really being taken out on Palestinian civilians. So far to date, the Israelis have dropped more weaponry and more bombings than over the three-week campaign that took place in 2009. They've admittedly dropped more than 800 tons of bombs on the Gaza Strip.
Israel says it's launching its attacks in response to the rocket fire from Gaza.
This is also another myth, Amy. It's important to keep in mind what the events were that led up to this whole issue. There were three Israelis who had gone missing in the West Bank. The three Israelis, even though the Israelis knew that they were killed immediately, they ended up putting Palestinians under a collective punishment. They ended up arresting more than 500 Palestinians. They killed 11 even before the attack on the Gaza Strip. They ransacked 2,000 homes. They ended up demolishing quite a number of homes. And it became clear that this was going to spiral out of control. Bibi Netanyahu himself said that he was going to try to escalate, to try to go after Hamas, even though they had absolutely no evidence. And what he really intended to do was to try to break this national unity government. He knew very well that the international support was alongside the Palestinians because Israel had continued its settlement activity. It had failed when it came to the peace process, and it needed to bring international support back to Israel by carrying out a bombing campaign against Gaza.
Critics say the Israeli government is just trying to destroy the Palestinian Authority, the unity deal with Hamas, and as well as the recent efforts for international recognition by joining UN conventions. Can you respond to this, Diana Buttu?
Yes, I think that this is very much part of the strategy. If you think back to where we were just a couple of months ago, we were at the end of the peace process, a peace process that had failed in large part because the Israeli side continued to build more and more settlements. Even Secretary Kerry had said that he was exasperated by the situation. The national unity government was formed. Israel kept trying to break that national unity government. The international community was not willing to side with Israel on this, recognizing that this national unity government was the best thing for Palestinians, and in particular there aren't any members of Hamas within the national unity government. And so he did his best to try to break it. He tried to do it through propaganda, and now he's trying to do it with this military assault, all the while trying to shift focus onto Hamas and what Hamas is doing, and ignoring the fact that he's actually heading a government that consists of people who call for the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians.
Can you explain who those are who are firing the rockets at Israel? Who are the forces within Gaza, and what is the response within the population?
There are different people who are firing rockets. Some of them are members of Islamic Jihad. Some of them are members of other smaller organizations, and some of them are members of Hamas. To be quite honest, I don't know. I don't live in Gaza at the moment. I used to, but I don't at the moment. So it's unclear. The response of the Palestinian population is mixed. On the one hand, Palestinians recognize that there needs to be some defense and that they need to defend themselves against what Israel is doing. And on the other hand, there are some Palestinians who are critical and who are saying that this is just simply going to wreak more and more havoc on Palestinian lives. But at the end of the day, they recognize who is dropping the bombs, which is the Israelis. And moving forward, I think that the only way that we can move forward is begin to talk about protecting Palestinians and having an international protection force that is there to protect Palestinians. This is something that the Israelis have refused to do over time. And I think now is the time that we begin to talk about this issue once again.
What has been the role of the United States?
The United States has been the biggest enabler for Israel. We haven't heard any condemnations by Secretary Kerry or Obama. Instead, we've simply heard that Israel has a right to defend itself, whereas we know what Israel's doing. It's defending its military occupation. We haven't heard anything regarding the death toll that's been inflicted on Palestinians and the efforts made by some Palestinians to broker a ceasefire. Instead, it's simply been a hands-off system of allowing Israel to do whatever it wants to do. And again, Amy, this is not going to bring us any further to ending this conflict.
Do you think Hamas is ready for a ceasefire?
Hamas has indicated that they are ready for a ceasefire. They've listed out their conditions for a ceasefire. There was a call made last Thursday by the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to Secretary Kerry to try to get him to broker a ceasefire. He indicated that Netanyahu had outright rejected it. Netanyahu keeps indicating that he will not entertain talk of a ceasefire. And if you think about it, there's no urgency for him to do so because of the fact that there has been no international response against what Israel's doing.
I know you have to leave, Diana Buttu, but what are the conditions that Hamas has laid out for a ceasefire?
The primary conditions are for Israel to stop the attacks. Another condition is that they've indicated that they should release those prisoners that were rearrested in this roundup after the three Israelis had gone missing. They've also indicated, they've put forward other conditions relating to the movement of people, etc. But interestingly enough, they've actually not mentioned anything about the ongoing siege, and which I think is one of the main reasons that this continues.
We'll be back after this break.
That ship out there will be smashed to bits. Use your emergency equipment.
It won't work. Nothing works. It's got to. It's no use. Everything seems to be stuck.
My life's worth a try anyway. Come on, fellas. You can make it.
Just listen to this. Spider-Man saves freighter. You can't tell me the captain couldn't have brought his ship in without the help of that publicity-seeking show-off, Spider-Man!
Don't get caught wasting power. Unplug cell phone, camera, and other battery chargers when charging is complete. Many electronic devices continue to use power even when you are not operating them. The amount of energy consumed by electronics in a year when they were not in use could power Whistler Blackcomb Resorts for 43 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
And we're back. Let's close the show with another interview titled, A Ground Invasion of Gaza Will Achieve Nothing But More Bloodshed. It's an interview with Haaretz columnist Gideon Levy, who says that the people of Gaza are victims of Israeli domestic politics and treated like hostages by Hamas. This was originally aired on July 14th. Let's listen.
Palestinian officials say that over 100 Palestinians have been killed thus far since the Israeli military offensive began against Gaza on Tuesday. The UN has also raised concerns about Israeli airstrikes in civilian homes, saying that they are probably in violation or possibly in violation of international humanitarian law. And in the meantime, at a press conference in Tel Aviv on Friday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, quote, no international pressure will prevent Israel from continuing its operation in Gaza. Now joining us to give his analysis is Gideon Levy. He's a prominent Israeli journalist and author of the weekly column Twilight Zone in the Israeli paper Haaretz, where he also serves as an editorial board member. Thanks for joining us, Gideon.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So let me get your response to Netanyahu's recent comments that, quote, no international pressure will prevent Israel from continuing its operation in Gaza, and also that Hamas is responsible for the deaths of Gazan civilians.
That's obviously ridiculous because Israel is not totally independent. Israel depends a lot on the United States, and the moment the United States will declare that fire should be ceased, there will be ceasefire. It's all about the devotion of the American administration, which did not prove itself until now.
So, I mean, as there's continued consideration of a ground invasion of Gaza, I mean, do you think that a ground invasion is a real military objective, or that public statements like these are driven by internal politics?
As usual in Israel, it's very hard to make the difference and to draw the border. Everything in Israel is domestic politics, including the security policy, and everything has also objective roles. In this case, there is a big pressure from the army and from the Israeli public opinion and media to go for a ground operation. I can't think about something more stupid than this, because Israel had tried before, and we know how it ends up. Just more bloodshed and no real achievements.
So if they already understand that there's really no military achievements to be made by a ground invasion, I mean, are you telling me then that near the 100 Palestinians and most of them civilians have died simply because of domestic politics?
No, I wouldn't say so, because the moment the Palestinians started to launch rockets on Israel, Israel could not stay passive. I claim that we should have approached it much before and not get into the situation in which Gaza is launching rockets. But once they started, Israel had to react, no doubt about this. I mean, no state in the world would just sit and wait tens of rockets to fall on its citizens and not do nothing. But in this situation that we are right now, when the Palestinians are bleeding already, everything must be done to get a ceasefire, because no achievements will be achieved.
Okay, and let me get your response to a statement that was made by military spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner. He said that the IDF, quote, uses its weapons to defend its civilians, and Hamas uses its civilians to defend its weapons. Let me get your response to that.
In propaganda, like in propaganda, you know, this guy is a propagandist in uniform. Until now, maybe Israel is guarding its civilians, and maybe the Palestinians are guarding their weapons, but the fact is that we are standing in front of 100 Palestinians killed, most of them civilians, and this killing is being made by Israel. Nothing more simple than this.
Okay, and why is Hamas continuing to fire, launch rockets onto Israel? I mean, it must know that it has no military advantage to doing so, and that it plays into the hands of Israeli officials who are calling for revenge and increased military operations against the Gaza Strip.
First of all, let's remember that the only way of Gaza to remind the world and the Israelis its existence is by launching rockets. When there are no rockets from Gaza, nobody deals with Gaza. Nobody cares about Gaza. Gaza is even not on the table of the so-called peace process. Gaza is totally denied, and the only way to remind us that there is a problem named Gaza is by launching rockets. Having said this, this does not mean that I think that there is much logic in launching all those rockets on Israel right now, because finally, who is going to pay for it are the people of Gaza who suffered so much. And I think, in a way, the Hamas is using them as hostages.
Okay, and let's get your take on how well the Israeli press and the international press has covered the situation in recent days.
It's very hard to call the Israeli press in those days a real press. It's rather a propaganda tool, trying to serve blindly and automatically the narrative that is dictated by the Israeli army. They do it, by the way, voluntarily. Nobody forces them to do so, because they want to please their readers and their viewers, who want now to get united around one narrative, which is the narrative that we should beat the Palestinians as much as we can. But at the same time, the Palestinian sacrifice is hardly covered in the Israeli media. And this is obviously very regrettable, because would Israel, more Israelis see how does Gaza look in those days? At least part of them, those with some kind of humanity and conscience, would they feel also something toward the real victims of this operation? In any case, that's about the Israeli media. About the international media, I have the feeling that this time it's still rather reacting in low key relative to former operations, because you feel that the world feels that it repeats itself again and again. And how many times can you follow it? So slowly, slowly, it's becoming a main story. International media bothers to be in Gaza and show the world also what's going on in Gaza. And that's the most crucial role now, to show the world what is happening in Gaza now, because Gaza is really under a terrible attack.
Okay, Gideon Levy, columnist for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And that's all we have time for this week. So remember, next week, a science-based themed show, I promise. So this is Don saying, eyes open, minds on.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Thanks for listening to Radio Free Thinker. Remember to visit us online at radiofreethinker.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you have any local skeptical events you would like us to mention on the air, email us at info@radiofreethinker.com.
Venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 million suns. The horizon of the Milky Way. Cosmos is full beyond measure. Elegant truths.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?